that whole bandwagon of following England is just bonkers. And they win a game and it's like, well, they're the best team in the world, and they're so not.
OTB AM, weekdays from 7:30 AM. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network with Getset Go. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetsetGo.ie.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hi there, folks. So Stuart Lancaster is going to tell us how the Lions might go about beating South Africa this summer. He's been doing the analysis on South Africa's defence and attack, and he's going to spell it out for us on Wednesday Night Rugby. We'll have Pat Nevin between 9 and 10 on his new memoir, The Accidental Footballer, which is a great read, by the way. Highly recommend it. So that will be the football show. And this hour, Amy Lawrence from The Athletic with us. Always a great guest. The Euros are on the way. We're talking a little bit of France with Amy. She's been deep diving on Mbappe's career, talking to Wenger, talking to parents, all sorts. So looking forward to chatting to Amy this hour. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter, as always. Richie McCormick, hello.
How are you, Joe?
Adrian Barry, hello to you.
Hey, Joe, Richie.
How is your Euros excitement level, Adrian Barry? Where are we on the Richter scale?
Cranking up a small bit. I just saw a TikTok of one of the England players playing a great prank on some of the other lads as they were getting out of the taxi to go to an airport somewhere or another, looking for Jordan Henderson's and Mason Mount's passports, and just great banter. So apparently they don't keep their passports, Joe, is the crux, which I didn't get to begin with, I have to say. Somebody else looks after them. They're not entrusted to do that. And yeah. But so that really obviously moved my excitement levels through the roof. But I am looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to seeing England, I have to say, as well. Mm. I actually think they can go ahead and win the thing. But yeah, not the same without us, obviously. But
no, well, it's not. I wouldn't trust them with their passports either, I have to say.
There's always somebody that in the family, though, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's just
somebody
too important.
Has to look after the passports. Somebody has them in a drawer somewhere. It's somebody's responsibility to take care of them and bring them en masse when you're all going to the airport.
Jordan Henderson, right, who's like organized all these great movements over the last 18 months and is like captain of one of the biggest clubs in the world. This great human being. He's not trusted to bring his passport to the airport. Mm. I mean, you know, there are young fellas there. And I'm sure, we've all been there. That he was cast the first stone and all that. And it's just too important to forget your passport and you couldn't be following up afterwards. So maybe it all makes sense.
Yeah. So it all kicks off Friday and yeah, it should be good. It should be good, I have to say. So Amy Lawrence is going to join us this hour and talk France. In particular, her piece on The Athletic on Mbappe is really interesting. Arsene Wenger thinks that Mbappe is on the cusp of properly going to another level. So here's what Wenger said. He said, if you take a group of talented players between 17 and 20, the most recent studies show, I mean, I've never seen these studies, but I'll take his word for it, that at 20, a small group separates from the others, as in the more talented group make that separation at 20. And he said then at 22 or 23, there's another separation where a smaller group moves away from the others again and goes completely to the top. And so Mbappe at 22 years of age is at that age and at that phase. This is the last hurdle for the top players to move away from the rest. They continue to improve. So in Wenger's opinion, we are poised to see Mbappe potentially explode at this tournament and claimed the mantle of world's best player, which amongst other storylines, Adrian, I have to say, I'll settle down for that over the summer.
Definitely. And I was sort of thinking that, you know, we've always said we're so fatigued with all the football. It's coming at us so often and we've nothing else to do for the last 18 months. So we've been knee deep in it, but I've actually missed it over the last, I mean, outside of the international stuff, obviously
24 hours,
a couple of weeks, whatever it's been. Has it even been that long? 10 days. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm looking forward to restarting. I kind of felt Mbappe was at that level already, but I mean, look at Arsene Wenger. I've been reading the studies and understands this thing better than I do, but I kind of thought like himself and Haaland had sort of pulled away from the pack a bit.
I suppose they had. I guess there's another separation coming because he's talking about them in Messi and Neymar terms. So Wenger, when he first saw Mbappe at Monaco, he said to himself, it's Pele. That's a good level. I wouldn't have, I mean, obviously we're not watching Pele all that often. Pele wouldn't have been the first name that jumped to my mind about Mbappe, but I'm sure Wenger's seen something there. I mean, maybe Pele in his younger days did have that raw pace that we associate with Mbappe. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, he was kind of a different game, but, you know, he did have a burst of speed, I guess, in 58, though. Really hadn't been seen hitherto for him until that point. I mean, your players who were more skillful were not necessarily pacey like the Grinches in that side, but they were tricky players, the Jimmy Johnsons and so on of this world. But yeah, Mbappe, he has a speed and he has a technique and there's everything about him to go on and become that upper echelon of player. I'd say it's an obvious statement to make, but he probably needs a move away from PSG for him to make that leap. You'd like to see him in a team surrounded by three or four people who are also approaching his level rather than maybe one or two that he has at PSG and a consistent week in, week out testing in a different league. Because, you know, I know Lille obviously won the league this year, but it has been PSG's to lose more often than not over the course of the last decade under the Al Khelaifi tutelage. So you'd figure a move is probably coming out of France because he has only obviously played for Monaco and PSG so far. Whether that's to Madrid, whether it's to somewhere in England, remains to be seen. But that move is going to be crucial, I think, if he's going to live up to what Monsieur Wenger sees of him in these next 2-3 years.
Yeah, I mean, on the Pelé comparison, Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo, is the one I kind of see him as at most in particular, but I guess we all have people of our own generation. Wenger, Pele would have been a bigger figure. On the move away, I mean, it's kind of amazing in this piece the extent to which Mbappe had the world at his feet. So, and if you're Mbappe, imagine how huge a figure Zidane is. So when he's a teenager, Zidane is literally bringing him on a personal tour of Real Madrid, begging him to sign. And they spend a week at Chelsea as well. So his parents represented him all the way through. And then they visited Wenger as well. I mean, you've got to think Wenger would be convincing. Come to Arsenal, I'll nurse you, French, all that kind of stuff. But the parents said, no, 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 he's staying at home. We're not sending a teenager away from home. And they seem to be really clued in and they represent him and they've guarded him against agents and all that nonsense all the way through. So Amy Lawrence has been on top of all that. She'll talk to us around 7:30. Stuart Lancaster, this is kind of a cool thing. This is a perk of the job. We got on to Stuart Lancaster last week and we said, you seem to know a bit about rugby. Do you want to give us the deal on how the Lions might go and beat South Africa? So it's like a coach's way of doing this, Adrian. He didn't want to get into who should start here, who should start there. Obviously, he's not a disinterested party when there's Leinster players as well. He's more saying, I'll give you the professional analysis of what South Africa do in defence, what they do in attack, and therefore what the options are for the Lions, and I'll present that to you. So that's what's coming up after 8 o'clock, which is kind of a cool thing.
Is that, I mean, because everything we've expected from the Warren Gatland squad is that we're just going to go out there and beat them up. Was that the start and end of it?
Well, he has a slight worry about the lack of creativity in midfield on the Lions team, for sure. That caught his eye. But he looks at the pack that they've picked and the athleticism. And basically, he's of the opinion that movement and getting the ball out wide is going to be absolutely crucial here for the Lions. And he thinks, looking at the team they've picked largely and the fact that Gatland has brought in Gregor Townsend, that is pretty much the way they're going to go. So, like, he watched a bunch of games. I don't know how much time he wasted on this on our behalf. So he watched a load of games, including the World Cup semi-final between Wales and South Africa, which was kind of turgid, a lot of kicking, low risk affair, you might remember or might not remember for those very reasons. And that, I guess, was very much the Gatland approach. But he also watched Gregor Townsend and Scotland playing South Africa in 2018 to see how Gregor Townsend went about it. And that was far more getting the ball wide and movement and pace kind of an approach. And he thinks ultimately that's probably the side they'll come down on, with variation, lots of variation, obviously. But it's interesting.
Gary Ringrose sized hole by the sounds of things is what he's saying there. No, the Lions midfield.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Probably a fair point. The Lions test can take on like a monster life of their own as well, like depending on the context of what's happened within plays within the first game, within tactics of the first game, what's worked, what hasn't, what way the result has gone. Do you need to chase it a bit in the second? I'd be interested in another dip back into Stuart Lancaster's expertise, although, like you're hinting at, I'm sure he has other things to be doing in his life.
I know. He'll do it.
He'll be up for that after the first test, because they definitely can, you know, like,
well,
the Lions run them close and suddenly, you know, do they go same again? And like Gatland being the sort of the grandmaster of that sort of the gamesmanship and all that, that'll just be fascinating once it gets underway.
Well, it's interesting. We had Tom English on last week talking about the Lions 97 tour. He'd written a book about it, which was actually, I was kind of thinking in advance, I was like, oh, this has been fairly well excavated at this stage. I don't need to hear much more about this tour. And yet it was brilliant. The South African side was brilliant. But he talked about the second test in 97 being just ferociously physical. And obviously the 09 test 12 years later, the second test is generally talked about for a lot of that generation as the most physical game they ever played. I guess you think about it, the second test of any Lions tour is bananas because they've had a good go at each other. And then for one team, there is the test series. Yes. So there's a degree of put your body on the line. There is no tomorrow. This is the test series. And for the other team, there is no tomorrow. We have to win this or we're bust and put your body on the line. So when you think about it, all the ingredients are there for second test and Lions tour to be just there is no tomorrow.
Totally. And the Tom English piece was so interesting in that I'd certainly never given a huge consideration. The 97 Lions stuff is such fabled. I remember having the video, the cassette of that thing.
Yeah.
And it got worn to pieces from being rewatched. It was just such a phenomenal thing. But I never gave the South African side of that much thought until I heard the piece with Tom English last week. And it was, it was fascinating. A lot of it sounded like, well, the Lions couldn't but win.
That's what the South African players think. All the players spoke to Tom English and said, if we were in such a shambles, we'd have whacked that Lions team. That's the South African view.
You know, I'd like to think of the how much those players, the Lions have dined out on that stuff over the last number of years.
Oh, listen.
These lads are saying, listen, you had to beat us.
Next time Keith Wood is on, there's some quotes from that book I'm reading to him. I'll tell you that for nothing. Yeah, so the short version, it's well worth watching that piece back. Between 95 when they won the World Cup and 97 when they hosted the Lions, all hell broke loose in South African rugby. It was insane stuff going on. So I hadn't fully appreciated that. And one last one, we have Pat Nevin on the way between 9 and 10 talking about his book. Richie McCormack, this book is up your street.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is up my Strassic because that man and his background in music and how he... wove himself in and out of the music scene, both in print and in terms of gigs and stuff like that in the 80s during his time at Chelsea is fantastic. And I was just, there was a piece, because obviously he's done loads of promo for this over the course of the last while. There's a great written piece about it on thequietest.com, whereby he goes through some of his favourite songs, and there are some, including the Galway band New Dad, that he's bigged up recently as well. And his taste is absolutely impeccable, and he really stands out in terms of footballers for, I guess, just their taste in music and how deep they go in terms of what they're doing outside of football.
Well, I have a copy of it, so you can get it. I'll leave it in here someday for you. I know we're not all in the office, but like, there's moments where, you know, Pat Nevin is talking about how he was at a Djerouti Column concert, and the Djerouti
and Vinnie Riley's band. Yeah.
Well, I mean, correct. Because one, he says he's so moved by this concert that the next day in training, at Chelsea training with like Kerry Dixon and the boys, he's still so emotional from the concert that he's crying and he's having to tell them all it's hay fever. And then a couple of chapters later, he's now friends with Vinnie Riley.
Yeah.
And Vinnie says, come on, we'll go around to my mate's house. You'll like him. And it turns out they spend the afternoon hanging out at Morrissey's house and get the full tour of the house from Morrissey. Oh, there are all these escapades and like small funny moments where Nevin's like, come on, show us the house and all this. And Morrissey's like, oh, I don't want to show you what's in there, in that door. And Nevin's saying, well, you have to show us now. And like Morrissey, ashamed, opens the door and it's a gym. And he's like, ugh, don't tell anyone, you know, I've got a gym in my house. So it's full of that good stuff.
I was picturing a slightly worse Father Ted scene where he walked into a room that was full of some memorabilia, let's say, knowing Morrissey's recent proclivities.
just a gym.
I'm glad it wasn't that. I'm glad it was just a gym. Yeah.
So that stuff is like dotted all the way through, which is kind of insane. You don't get that in many books. So that is the show this evening. Now until 10 o'clock, we should kick off the news round and off the ball with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made what matters. I'll get to some of your texts in a second. But Richie, you're kicking us off.
Yeah, with Amsterdam and Ireland must take the long routes towards World Cup qualification at the European Hockey Championships. Needing a win to advance to the semi-finals today, Sean Dancer's side played out a 1-1 draw with Spain in Amsterdam. Roisin Upton got the Ireland goal today and they now must compete with sides who didn't make the semi-finals. One of those is Italy to secure the remaining World Cup qualifying berth from those European Championships.
Yeah.
Rafa Nadal, meanwhile, is through to a 14th French Open semi-final. He reeled off 9 games in a row to complete a 4-set victory over Diego Schwartzman in their quarterfinal this afternoon on the Philippe Chatrier court. Then Nadal will face either Novak Djokovic or the 9th seed Matteo Berrettini in the semi-finals. Djokovic currently 2-1 up in the first set. That is still going with serve. While on the women's side of things, Maria Sakkari remains on track to become the first ever Greek woman to win a Grand Slam singles title. She beat defending French Open champion Iga Swiatek in straight sets today, and Sakkari will face Barbora Krejcikova in tomorrow's semi-finals. Krejcikova was also a straight sets winner today over the 17-year-old Coco Gauff.
So, Gordo, I once left my wallet at home on a trip away, only realised on the bus out to the airport. Being reminded that I was spending my mate's money throughout the holiday at every turn quickly got old. Keith says, if England win, I'll be pleased for the players I watch week in, week out. If they lose, my Irish heart will be pleased at the fallout and the recriminations. It's a win-win for the Irish footballing fan. I thought, says Connor, that the Phil Foden Gaza hair job was a bad sign, and then the pranks are the next bad sign. These lads need to be focused on having less of a lark, more on getting over the major tournament hurdle that has tripped up every England team since 1966, he says, in capital. Sounds like an England fan concerned at all the fun they're having, Adrian.
Yeah, they probably, a lot of those squads couldn't have been that accused of not having good crack. So it's not as if that, but like, look at it at the same time. I think at this juncture, they need to be, saw Miguel Delaney tweeting earlier on, our two lads, our two boys, having a darts match. So like, that's the time for it now. And also, like, I mean, by and large, they're going to be locked up in hotels for the next few weeks. And I think that whatever they can do to have the bands, and have a bit of crack, whatever it is, I'd say just go over it. Like, you know, there's no point. Geez, you can't be taking it too seriously for that period of time. That's one quick way to lose it before you even get on the pitch.
I saw the darts competition. That's been ongoing. I think the media involved again, like a couple of years ago. And I did see that the ERA contingent, Grealish and Rice, were partaking.
Boys. I think it's stomachable if, as long as Gareth Southgate is manager of England, I think. I'm just taking, you know, an educated guess in that, like, it's not like we wouldn't have to be listening to Big Sam. He's not the sort, I don't think, that's going to be trying to ram it down everybody's throat. So, and it's not like, look, we'll see. It's not like winning the World Cup either.
Yeah, it's not like Big Sam saying, first Brexit, now we've won the Euros, this is the best time of my life. It's a different
kind of vibe. Southgate's letter in the Players' Tribune as well to England fans in the wake of everything was absolutely exceptional. Like, it completely struck the right tone as regards what he wants from his England side and what he is as an England manager, which is more than just arranging 11 players on a field. I mean, he goes really, really into granular detail with everything he does, and it's well worth a read if anybody hasn't seen it out there. Even if you are of an anti-English persuasion, Southgate's letter to England fans and the Players' Tribune is well worth picking up.
What was Dan McDonald's line? I know he's probably listening right now saying, give me credit. Are they going to come back to my line?
Yeah, they were talking. Obviously, the picture was of our boys, Jack and Deco.
The era contingent.
Playing tennis, era contingent.
Yeah, for future reference, and the era contingent.
And Dan replied something along the lines of, those two boys are fond of an L180.
Hey, very good. Mairead asks an interesting philosophical question. Is there even such a thing as good taste and bad taste in this day and age? Surely all music has its plus points. I think that's fair, Mairead.
In terms of the 1980s footballer, I'd say so, yeah. When you consider that most of Pat's contemporaries were Phil Collins, No Jacket Required, and Dire Straits heads pretty much exclusively. And he was going to Geraldy Column gigs and scribing for the NME and all that kind of stuff. There was a line in the sand back then between good and bad, I guess. I don't think it's as prevalent or it really exists anymore now.
His hero growing up was John Peel, for obvious reasons. And then when he moved to Chelsea and was hanging around, he became mates with John Peel. And then he would sit in studio as John Peel presented his show. And but Peel, on the understanding, Peel was never going to kind of make a big deal out of this. But sometimes in his book, he was saying that Peel would play a record and then just let everyone know, I've got the famous footballer in tonight, but wouldn't say anything else other than that. So it's kind of dream come true for the boy from Glasgow. So where are we going next?
To the Model County, David Fitzgerald has accepted a 2-game touchline ban. The Wexford hurling manager received the punishment, having been banished to the stands in the Model County's Allianz Hurling League draw with Antrim. Fitzgerald will watch this month's Leinster semi-final with Laois from the Nolan Park stands. And on to matters Super League, because UEFA has temporarily suspended the disciplinary proceedings against the three Super League holdouts. Barcelona, Real Madrid and Juventus had been threatened with Champions League expulsions for not disavowing the breakaway project. Earlier this week, the Swiss Ministry of Justice ruled that football's governing bodies couldn't punish the three clubs for their Super League involvement. On a similar tip, the six Premier League clubs who attempted to join the Super League face a 30-point deduction if they try a similar stroke in future. Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United and Tottenham have been collectively fined £22 million for now. However, any further breakaway attempts will see them hit with a €25 million fine each on top of that aforementioned points deduction.
Okay. The managerial merry-go-round situation?
Yeah, Bruno Lage says he has big ambitions for Wolves. The 45-year-old has succeeded Nuno Espirito Santo as the head coach at Molineux. Lage was most recently in charge of Benfica, where he won the Portuguese title in 2019. Meanwhile, Nuno's proposed move to Crystal Palace has collapsed. The ex-Wolves boss had been in advanced negotiations about replacing Roy Hodgson at the Selhurst Park club. However, a disagreement regarding a budget for his backroom team has seen those talks with the Palace hierarchy collapse.
Okay. So will Wolves just have Portuguese managers forevermore? Is that how this is going to work?
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. It seems so. Like, as long as there's that involvement with Jorge Mendes, et cetera, they're going to either have Mendes clients or that merry-go-round of Portuguese coaches. It's a weird situation.
Yeah, it is weird. I don't like fully know. Is it all... Actually, I'm not going to say anything else for legal reasons. Oh, what's the deal there? But he has an influence. Lads, can I get your views on best outside bet for the Euros? In my head, I'm going for Denmark. Waste of time or good value? I would be faffing to you. I don't know. I'm not watching all these teams all that often. When there's an international window on, I'm either in here presenting or I'm watching Ireland. So I'd be lying. Come back to me two rounds in when admittedly the value will be gone. But I don't know. A lot of people are mentioning Denmark, I know.
Yeah, I'd go as a dark horse that maybe might go with the Swiss. I was going through their squad and it's pretty handy, the different ways of skinning a cat in that squad. And outside of obviously the Sheridan Shaqiri that everyone would know. So it kind of, in terms of just an upset, maybe to reach the quarterfinals, they'd be probably my bet. But I don't think anybody's looking beyond France for this yoke, really, are they? Because they just seem so streets ahead of everybody else.
Well, yeah. Stephen Elliott picked Portugal last night.
Portugal's a good show, actually.
Portugal, Spain, Holland, even those are probably considered...
The Dutch are pants. The Dutch under Frank de Boer have been rotten over the past while, and not having Virgil van Dijk at the back is going to be a big loss. They're missing obviously Donny van de Beek. Just generally, their results haven't been good over the last year under de Boer. He's a rubbish coach by all accounts, and they'll probably won't do that well. Cut to them making the final in a month's time and making me look like a right chump. But like, they have been poor heading into this.
So, meanwhile, what's going on with Spain and COVID?
Yeah, they've essentially got a shadow squad going on, much like England did during the Six Nations. The Spanish Football Federation say the latest batch of testing conducted on the Euro 2020 squad has returned negative. Diego Llorente joined Sergio Busquets in testing positive for COVID-19 prior to the finals. Head coach Luis Enrique has assembled a 17-man parallel bubble to mitigate for any further withdrawals. None of his Euro 2020 squad were able to play in last night's final warm-up friendly, but the under-21s still managed to beat the senior Lithuania side by 4-0. Spain's Group E campaign gets underway on Monday evening against Sweden in Seville.
Okay. Jacques Nienaber has been talking about the South African situation.
He has indeed, and he is confident that both Damien Delende and Orji Snyman will be fit for the Lions tour. The Munster pair suffered superficial burns in a fire pit accident at the weekend when petrol was introduced to that fire, and the former Munster defence coach even accepts that his player's explanation of the situation is fine.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when accidents happen like that, any accident, I mean, a car accident would preferably not be ideal, but it's not something that we can control. And I think that's why people call it an accident. And for me, being an island, I understand what... So to put it in context, it rains a little bit more in Ireland than in South Africa. And even in Ireland, when I was there, if you wanted to use wood fire and braai on a wood fire or sit in front of a wood fire like we do in South Africa, if you miss home a little bit, I did the same. I took a little bit of petrol, throw it on top of the wood and light it, because otherwise the wood is wet. So you can't get it burning. So I guess I did it the same way everybody does it like that over there. And accident happened, you know. And they explained it to me, and it makes the perfect sense, you know, when you put fire on and the fire just ran up into the canister and the canister fell and the petrol spilled over their legs, you know.
Yeah, I was reading two of them, certainly, I don't want to name names. I do think it was D'Alande and Sneeman, but certainly two of them are going to see a specialist on Friday to assess the burns and hopefully get the all clear to go home. So,
absolutely shocking. I was reading that stuff as well. What it's terrible, and you wish them the obviously best of recoveries, and hopefully it's not too severe. What he was saying there though made no sense whatsoever. Absolutely no sense at all. Everybody in Ireland who burns wood in a fire pit throws petrol on it. What is he talking about?
Ah, come on, Adrian. What do you do with your weekends?
The idea that the wood is all wet. What is he on about? Like, that's all just what he was saying there. Like, as I said, preface it with best of luck to them. Obviously, it was an accident. They never would have intended to do that. But the idea that people throw petrol on fire is not a good, is not true. It's incredibly dangerous and shouldn't just be laughed off like, well, that's what they all do over there. It's a ludicrous notion. I have been in the habit of having a fire pit out the back here over the last year. I've been one of those people that's been in that craze, and nothing more than a bit of cardboard and a bit of kindling is all that's required. What he was talking about there is beyond ludicrous.
It was almost like he's talking about trying to get this thing going in the middle of a blizzard or something. And so this is different. It's different to what are they called, chimenea type things. This is an open pit is different. It's almost like just an open fire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the same concept, except for a chimney will literally have some sort of a chimney attached to it. The thing that I have is an open fire pit. But they're obviously do come with their dangers. You have to be incredibly careful with them. I would not dream of throwing petrol on it, no matter what was going on. I would just consider it to be the most ludicrous. As I said to you, to get it lit, like, there are so many. Every petrol station you go into now will sell you air dried logs. And even if you left those out in the wet for a month, they'd still be perfectly good. It's not the wet isn't getting into them. The wet is superficially outside of them. You'd never need to throw petrol on it.
Okay.
What he's talking about there is ludicrous.
Okay. Well, I guess lesson learned and all that. So, the Rainbow Cup, this really has not gone well. Benetton are through to the final now.
Yeah, absolutely. Pro 14 organisers confirming today Benetton are through to the final of the Rainbow Cup. The Italians have been awarded 4 points after Ospreys were unable to fulfil this weekend's game following a COVID-19 outbreak in their camp. Benetton will now host the winners of the South African Conference Final in Treviso on the 19th of June.
Yeah. I mean, it's some turnaround for them. They didn't win a single one of their matches across the whole Pro 14 season last year, and suddenly they're into the final now. I mean, it was always tilted in their direction because they just had to play Zebre a couple of times, whereas the Irish provinces were almost knocking each other out of contention. And then I couldn't quite work out who was playing who or why, but anyway, good luck to them. They're into the final. Yeah, it's kind of
let us never speak of it again.
Yeah. Stuart Lancaster on later on. We'll touch on the captain's challenge. Obviously, he wants that gone. And just the length of games anyway is out of control at the moment. Like, the Champions Cup final first half was 52 minutes. There are no captain's challenges in the Heineken Champions Cup, and that was still 52 minutes that first half. And I didn't watch Glasgow against Zebre on Friday night, like I'm sure you two did, but the second half of that match went on for 67 minutes. I had to double check this. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So there were like 7 TMO decisions, and the TMO and the referee were talking for coming up on 25 minutes of across a 67-minute second half. Like, I don't care how much you love rugby, that's not going to cut
insane.
It for much longer.
It ruins the spectacle of it. And like, whoever else as well, add this into the fact that they were 8:15 kickoffs. Like, whoever came up at 8:15 kickoffs, I'm tempted to start some very dark internet rumors about, because it's a pain in the hole for people like me. But also, it stretches games like that are stupidly long way past 10 o'clock, which I don't think suits anybody. It doesn't suit reporters, doesn't suit supporters when they're going to be back inside the stadiums for it. And it just makes the game itself a bit of a trudge that nobody really wants to get involved with.
Yeah. The I mean, even just the reset scrums all the time are getting me lately. Just going on forever.
It seems to be there's a confluence of loads of stuff. Keith Wood spoke very well on it with Nathan and Owen this morning. Neve Briggs was tweeting about it the other week. She was saying that it's becoming really difficult to watch as a game, like stop-start all the time. And everything is like, it feels as if like you want the right decisions to be made, and that's grand. And you want, obviously, the tackle height and the tackle area to be safe. And that's absolutely fine. But geez, it just like feels as if it's becoming very switch-offable.
Fellas, we are out of time. Richie McCormack, Adrian Barry, thanks, Mill.
Nice one.
Cheers.
We have Stuart Lancaster after 8 o'clock. We have Pat Nevin reflecting on his life and times on the back of the release of his new memoir, After Nine. And up next, Amy Lawrence is going to talk to us all things Mbappe and France.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.